The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, today's episode is episode 50. So, I've been doing this since January, and here we are at episode 50. That got here real quick. And just want to say a special shout out to everybody who's been listening from start, or just if you've ever, you just picked it up at any random point, and thank you for listening. I mean, it's been pretty cool because since the day I started, I haven't had one lull in listeners. Every single day, at least one of my episodes gets streamed. So really, thank you to everybody who's been listening, and hopefully you continue to listen and spread the word. So let's get started with the Top 10 MLB Power Rankings for this week. We do have a little bit of shakeup at number one. You know, the Yankees have been, they still are the most dominant team, but, you know, as I've mentioned before with the Power Rankings, a lot of what goes into it is, of course, the week, this past week. And I do like to take into account everything that's gone on throughout the season, but definitely this past week is what's been going on. And real talk, there is a team that's not only been dominating this past week, but they've just been one of the most dominant teams this season. And that would be the Houston Astros. They are 51-27. They went They've been 8-2 in their last 10 games, and they're currently on a 6-game winning streak, which is the longest winning streak in the league at this current point in time. And this week they beat some good teams. You know, they just took out the Angels, who are their division rivals. Then they played a 1-game series against the Yankees, and they dominated them. And then they also dominated the New York Mets this week. Yesterday they tied a Major League Baseball record with the most strikeouts in one game, and they had 20 strikeouts yesterday in yesterday's game alone. And their pitching, their starting pitching is by far the best in the league. I mean, they do not have one weakness in the starting pitching. So then you take it over to their hitters, and it's just like yesterday, Jeremy Pena. Have any of you ever heard of Jeremy Pena? Because I sure have not heard of the name Jeremy Pena. Well, guess what? Jeremy Pena had a great day yesterday. Like I've said about the Astros all season long, it's not just one dude. It's usually every week, it's a different guy who starts dominating by hitting. And yesterday was Jeremy Pena. He hit the walk-off home run to seal the deal for the Astros yesterday. And then Altuve, he had another great week also. So you really got to watch out for these Astros. They really, while the Yankees are a great and complete team as well, the Astros, I think, are going to be a very tough team for anybody to get past just because this starting pitching is so deep. You really cannot match them unless you have a lot of offense, which the Yankees do, of course. And the Yankees have overcome a lot of attrition this season already. So I just kind of feel like the AL at this point, I know we're only at the halfway point of the season now, but it's going to come down to the Astros and Yankees. And so at number two this week on my Top 10 MLB Power Rankings, it's the New York Yankees. So they didn't fall that far. Really, the only reason why they fell is just because they lost to the Astros earlier in the week. Plus, the Astros are on the 6-game winning streak, like I said. And then also, when you look at the last 10 games, Astros have been 8-2, and the Yankees are 6-4. So the Astros have been given the slight edge this week. The Yankees' overall record, though, is 58-22, so they're almost going to be hitting that 60-win plateau here. I would imagine at some point this week they're going to be the first and only team to hit 60 wins. So look out for that. Giancarlo Stanton, man, this dude has been lights out since he came back from the injured list a couple weeks ago. He's just been knocking him out of the park. And he's just been playing some great baseball as well as Aaron Judge, who still leads the league in home runs with 29 home runs. Then you had Anthony Rizzo. He continues to rake as well. And then they're pitching. They did get their closer back this week, but he actually looked pretty bad. So we'll see. He seems to be their only weakness at this point. I mean, other than that, the Yankees, they're rolling also. And like I said, the only reason why they fell from the number one position is only because the Astros had a better week. But I fully believe that these are the two best teams in the league. And right now, if you asked me who I think is going to be winning the World Series, it's probably going to be one of those two. So that's number one and two right now. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Milwaukee Brewers. Overall record of 46-35 and 7-3 in their last 10 games. This week they played the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Tampa Bay Rays. And they just absolutely, not only did they dominate this week, but the Brewers have really turned it on. You know, they had that really horrible losing streak about a month ago. And then after they got out of that funk, they've really been flying high. Brandon Woodruff, he had a great outing yesterday. I believe he had something like 8 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, something like that. Then you also have Rowdy Tellez, who's just been knocking home runs out of the park like there's no tomorrow. Even Christian Yelich, the former MVP, who's pretty much been quiet the last couple of seasons, he really had a good week. And then Josh Hader, he leads the league with saves. And the Brewers are just an all-around solid team. So they've moved up to number three this week in my power rankings. Then at number four in my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Atlanta Braves. Overall record of 46-34. The last 10 games, they're 6-4. This week they played the Cincinnati Reds and the Philadelphia Phillies. They actually just lost a close one to Cincinnati yesterday. You know, Charlie Morton, he had a stellar outing for a starting pitcher yesterday. He went basically the distance. I mean, the only thing that cost the Braves yesterday was their bullpen. Or else they probably would have won this game. I mean, the Reds are one of the worst teams in the league, so you shouldn't really be losing to them. But, I mean, they took 2 of 3. The Philadelphia Phillies played them really well this week, so that's kind of the reason why they dropped as well in my power rankings. But, you know, like I said, Morton had a great outing yesterday. Marcell Ozuna, he's just been on fire the last couple of weeks. He had 2 home runs in a game. I think it was either yesterday or Saturday he had 2 home runs. But even before that, I mean, he's just been hitting home runs all week. So Ozuna, he's been their main offensive force. But also Austin Riley, he's had a great week. And then Spencer Strider, their pitcher, he had a great outing the other night with I believe 10 strikeouts. So the Braves, while they had kind of a mediocre week, they're still one of the most dominant teams in the league. And they're another great all-around team, like I was saying, with the Brewers. Then at number 5 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Los Angeles Dodgers, who overall record of 49-26, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This week they played the San Diego Padres and the Colorado Rockies. Mookie Betts has come off of the injury list, and he came right in yesterday and had a great game. Also having a great game was pitcher Clayton Kershaw. He's kind of had a down couple of weeks since he came back from the injured list, but he had a very solid outing with no earned runs. I think he went like 7 innings, and he had like something like 8 strikeouts. So Kershaw still continues to dominate. Trey Turner, he's also still continuing to dominate. And Freddie Freeman, he's also having a great season as well. And at number 6 on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the New York Mets. Overall record of 49-30. Still the top team in the in the NL, but they did have a very down week. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games. This week they played the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros. And Buck Showalter, he got his 1,600th win yesterday, career win. So congratulations to him. He's been a great manager throughout his entire career, and he's really managing the hell out of the Mets this season and getting the most out of every single player, including 2 players who had a solid week this week. Carlos Carrasco, he continues to have just a solid pitching season. He has been, I mentioned at the beginning of the season that is a guy you need to watch out for because he's always been solid. He just fell off the last like year or two, but now he's dominating strong right now with the Mets, and he came out and had a strong outing this week. But also Eduardo Escobar, he's a very streaky player, but this week he was on, and he made some big plays this week. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Boston Red Sox. Overall record of 44-35, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This week they played the Cubs and the Toronto Blue Jays, their rookie pitcher, Josh Winkowski, He is one of very few pitchers to start their season with four starts in a row of at least five innings with two earned runs or less and one or no walks. So he's just having a great year, and he's just a dude who's coming out of nowhere. Honestly, that's really what the Boston Red Sox team is this year. They don't really have any standout players who are just really taking over the team, especially in the pitching department. But they seem to have a very solid rookie on their hands, at least for now. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Minnesota Twins. Their overall record of 45-37. 6-4 in their last 10 games. This week they played the Baltimore Orioles and the Cleveland Guardians. And, you know, Byron Buxton, he just continues to have a solid season. He also had a yet another walk-off this week. And right now he's right up there in home runs with 21 home runs on the season at this point. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, the Seattle Mariners. Overall record of 39-42, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This week they played the Oakland A's and the Baltimore Orioles. But they've just had a really solid couple of weeks. Julio Rodriguez, their rookie, he had not only a great game yesterday, but he's had a very solid solid season, but solid last month. So he's been a huge standout. I believe he's the rookie of the month as well. Then you had Robbie Ray. You know, he's been known to be a very solid pitcher, but he's also a very streaky pitcher as well, where he will just be down when he's down. But yesterday he was up and he had a solid outing with 12 strikeouts. And then another no-name, Abraham Toro, he has come through in the clutch in a couple of games this week as well. And then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings, the St. Louis Cardinals. Overall record of 44-37, 4-6 in their last 10 games. Had a very up and down week, but they did have a very solid week this week. They played against the Philadelphia Phillies and the Florida Marlins. They did a couple of marquee things this week where actually Saturday, in one inning, four batters in a row hit a home run. That's only happened a handful of times in the league, so that was pretty crazy. And then earlier in the week, Nolan Arenado, he hit for his second career cycle in a game. So, the Cardinals, while they had kind of a down week, they still are a very solid team, and they continue to have very standout games throughout this season. And since we are at the midway point of the season, usually the midway point is kind of the All-Star game, but that's coming up here in a couple weeks. So, but usually, you know, 4th of July around this time of year, that's the midway point. And right now we're looking at the division leaders at this point. In the AL East are the New York Yankees, 58-22 overall record, and they have a 13.5 game lead. So they've got a very solid lead on their division. In the AL Central right now, the Minnesota Twins lead it with a record of 45-37, but they only have a two-game lead. So it's very close in that division. And then in the AL West, the Houston Astros with a 51-27 record hold a 13.5 game lead in their division as well. So right now, like I said, to start the power rankings, the Yankees and the Astros are the cream of the crop, and they're proving it with those 13.5 game leads. So they probably already have their divisions wrapped up, and we're only halfway through the season. Then in the NL East, the New York Mets have the division with a 49-30 record, but their lead has dwindled to 3.5 games. The Braves are hot on their trail, so we'll see. That should be very interesting for the second half of the season. Then in the NL Central, the Milwaukee Brewers lead their division with a 46-35 record. Only hold a two-game lead, though, so it's very close there. Then in the NL West, the Dodgers currently hold that division with a 49-29 record, but only a 3.5 game lead over the Padres at this point in time. And my San Francisco Giants are currently, they're trash right now. They just had a horrible week, but they've actually had a horrible couple of weeks. But this past weekend, they just got swept by the White Sox. And I mean, the games weren't even close. So whatever's going on in San Francisco, this team really needs to get it in order. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to, just because they're mostly a bunch of no names. We don't really have any standouts. We do have a couple of standouts when it comes to pitching, starting pitching at least. But overall, this team is very underwhelming, and they look like trash, in my opinion, especially after this past weekend getting swept by the White Sox and not even really having a chance in any of the games. So very disappointing baseball season, in my opinion, for the Giants at this current point in time. All right, and then we had a couple things over the weekend happen in the NBA. Rudy Gobert, the star center with the Utah Jazz. Now, we knew the Jazz were either going to be moving Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert. It looks like they ended up trading Gobert away to the Minnesota Timberwolves for a bunch of garbage players, in my opinion. They're not even worth mentioning. You know, Minnesota is getting a very solid player, but I don't know if they need another center because, Karl Anthony Towns, he's their center. But he's a great shooter as well. And as is Gobert. So I don't think it could be a bad thing having those two guys in the paint. You're definitely going to be getting a ton of rebounds and you're getting two great players, but I just don't really know how that's going to work out for Minnesota. We'll see what happens there. But Utah finally got rid of Gobert and he has moved on to a new team. I do think if Gobert is still the all-star player and he fits well with the Timberwolves and what they're doing out there, then they should be a dominating force. But it just kind of seems weird to have that many, basically two true centers playing on your team. It's going to be kind of odd to see, but maybe they'll be able to make it work. And then in more odd NBA news, Zion Williamson is getting an extension with the New Orleans Pelicans. The reason why I think it's odd is just because hasn't done shit. He's pretty much just been injured his entire time there. So I don't think he's really technically earned an extension. But I mean, also at the same time, the Pelicans, he is a top draft pick and he's expected to be a top player if he's ever on the court, which who knows when the fuck that's ever going to be. But he did end up getting an extension that's looking like it's going to be about at least $200 million. So good for him. I mean, he's had a very mediocre career so far, but we'll see if homeboy can get it together and actually have a solid season this year. So, I mean, that's what the Pelicans need. That's for damn sure. Then also, point guard John Wall ended up signing with the Los Angeles Clippers, so have fun losing with them. And then Zach LaVine, he ended up re-signing with the Chicago Bulls. I think that's a pretty big deal just because he was one of the reasons why they actually had a pretty solid season in Chicago until all the injuries started hitting them. So I see why he ended up re-signing with them. Then UFC 276 this weekend. A lot went on. There were two retirements. There was two guillotine submissions. And there was a straight-up snooze fest as well. So let's get right into that. Let's start off in the early prelims because this week we got a lot of fights. This was actually what they did call in Vegas fight weekend. Which is just a big deal for the UFC. So we got a lot of fights this weekend. And so this week we actually had early prelims, and then the main events. So we had a lot of UFC fighting on hand this weekend. So let's start off in the early prelims. Jessica Eye versus Macy Barber. I actually enjoy both of them, especially Jessica Eye. She's not really like a dominating UFC player. She doesn't have she's got basically kind of like a 500 record. I think her overall record's like 15-11 or 15-10. So it's not like she's extremely dominating, but she's just got great boxing skills and bitch can take a punch. The last couple of fights of hers that I've seen, it's like both women's faces are bruised, battered, and bloodied, and both of them are still standing. It's just crazy. And then Macy Barber, she's also an up and coming dominating fighter who's probably going to be making title defenses here pretty soon. It ended up going all three rounds, and it ended up being a decision in Macy Barber's favor because she did dominate this entire fight. And Jessica I, at the end, ended up retiring. And I wasn't surprised by that just because it was the weirdest fight I've ever seen for Jessica I, because like usually she is a bruiser and she likes to box and she likes to fuck you up. And like I said, usually her fights are bruised, battered, and bloodied, both women. But this time around, it was just so weird because from the start, like she was basically just like leaning her body up against Macy's. Against the fence, like the whole time, and she wasn't doing anything, and it was really weird because like it seemed like she had good position, but then Macy Barber would just get in some really good hits, and that's really why she ended up winning, because she did dominate her the whole time. But I just thought it was a very weird fight for Jessica I, and then when she retired at the end, I was like, okay, well maybe that makes sense. Maybe she kind of came into this fight knowing she was going to retire, and she just had lost the love for the fight. But regardless, I enjoyed her career and I'm enjoying Macy Barber's career as well. But she ended up retiring after the fight. So we'll see what happens in her future. Actually, my friend Simon, he had made a good comment about how he thinks she might want to go into coaching. And I also agree with that, because one thing's for sure that we need in the UFC. I mean, the UFC is great about the balance between men and women, and the main events, they really do go by who's popular. It's not like if you're a man, you're going to be number one over the woman. Like they always, if you're a draw, you're a draw, no matter what you are. And so I do like the UFC because it is very, they do try to highlight women all the time. But one thing I do notice with the UFC is that we need more women coaches. I don't think there are any women coaches. And if there are, I don't recall any, but usually their corner is packed full of men, which I don't have an issue with. Obviously that's who your coaches are going to be. But it would be nice to see some of these ex-UFC players, fighters, some of these women, it would be nice to see some of them step into the coaching arena. And so maybe that Jessica I definitely seems like the type who would be a good coach, at least just judging from kind of what I've seen over the years from her. She just seems like she would be a good coach. So maybe that's the route she would end up going. But whatever she does, I enjoyed the fights that I watched of hers other than this last one. Then in the preliminaries, Jim Miller versus Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Whoever won this matchup was going to become the all-time wins leader in the UFC. Both of these guys came in with 23 wins apiece. And Jim Miller actually has fought in a total of 40 fights. So that's also, I believe, a UFC record, if I'm correct. So that guy's just been fighting like a motherfucker. But so is Cerrone. Cerrone's actually a very, I would call him a legendary UFC fighter. But it ended up being a Jim Miller round two guillotine submission on Donald Cerrone. And it was very weird because, it looked like it was going to be a very equally matched fight. Neither guy was really getting one up on the other one. And in round two, right away, the both of them go for high kicks to the head. And at first, like in real time, it looked like they both hit each other. But actually, Cerrone got Miller right in the head. But what happened was Cerrone ended up slipping when he landed. And Miller was just able to take advantage. And he got him in a guillotine submission right quick. And he ended up getting the win. And then that's when we had our second retirement of the night. Donald Cerrone took his gloves, threw him in the middle of the ring, and even Jim Miller, because I have a feeling you could kind of tell that this was going to be Cerrone's last go-round. It was just something I could see, especially in the fight here in Austin that ended up getting canceled a couple weeks ago. I have a feeling he was going to do it then, and that's why they kind of rushed this fight along, just so he could hurry up and end his career. He did, like I said, he did have a legendary career. He never was a title holder, but he's been the face of UFC for many years. He's fought a lot of great guys. He's had a lot of great wins. And obviously I kind of feel like if you're going for all-time wins in the UFC, you got to be considered one of the greats. And so Jim Miller did end up getting his 24th win, which is most overall in UFC history. And Donald Cerrone ended up retiring. So that two two retirements that night. But then we also had two guillotine submissions. And the second guillotine submission came right after that that Donald Cerrone guillotine submission between Jalen Turner and Brad Riddell. And let me tell you, Jalen Turner came right out in round one and got him. With 45 seconds on the clock, this motherfucker put this dude in the guillotine so quick, it was just crazy. He walks out, I think he kicks him once, then he punches him in the face, gets this nice punch, and he just gets him into submission like so quick. And I was like, wow. Two guillotine submissions in a row. Not only on the same night, but in a row. So that was a quick one. But now let's get to the main events. And let's just talk about the title fight, the main title fight, Israel Adesanya versus Jared Cannonier. That ended up being a total snooze fest. Now, Adesanya, he got the unanimous decision. He definitely... I mean, if you watched it, he definitely was the winner. He dominated the matchup, but it was just overall it was a snooze fest. Most, I mean, the crowd was booing at one point because they were just so like bored. But I mean, sometimes that's what happens. The hype is better than the actual fight. Happens all the time. As a matter of fact, there's lots of times, including this weekend, where the preliminaries and the early preliminaries have a lot better matchups than the main event. But regardless, Adesanya, he still is the champion. He's only got one loss on his record. And it looks like his next matchup is going to be with the winner of this matchup between Alex Pereira and Sean Strickland. Pereira came right out and knocked Strickland out in the first round. And this is kind of setting up what it looks like is going to be Adesanya versus Pereira. And Pereira actually owns Adesanya in kickboxing. They used to fight each other in kickboxing before they both hit the UFC. So I think that's going to be a very interesting matchup if it ends up happening. And that seems to be the most likely next move for both guys. So we'll see what happens there. But definitely the fight of the night was between Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway. This was their third fight against each other, and definitely the most dominating, at least by Volkanovski. He just pummeled this dude each and every round. He did get the decision, but it was by far the best fight of the night. And Holloway had no chance. I mean, I'm actually surprised Holloway ended up standing by the end of the night, just because Volkanovski fucked this dude's face up royally. So it was a crazy night for UFC 276. Like I said, two retirements, two guillotine submissions, and one snooze fest for the main event. All right, and since it's the 4th of July, today's Trop 5 list is going to be the Trop 5 4th of July memorable moments. I mean, baseball's synonymous with the 4th of July. I mean, especially for me, like what I think about most when I'm thinking about the 4th of July is baseball, because that's usually what I do all day long is watch baseball, especially on the 4th of July. And so there's quite a few memorable moments that have happened on the 4th of July in baseball. So let's get it started with number five of my Trop 5 4th of July memorable moments. Two pitchers have reached the 3,000 strikeouts club, which is a very prestigious club. Very few pitchers are in that club. And two pitchers have hit that plateau on the 4th of July. The first time being July 4th, 1980. Nolan Ryan, who was with the Houston Astros at the time, the game was the Houston Astros versus the Cincinnati Reds, and Ryan struck out Cesar Geronimo and got his 3,000th strikeout. Unfortunately, Houston lost that day, but Nolan Ryan would end up not only going on to have 3,000 strikeouts, but he is actually the all-time strikeout leader and one of the greatest pitchers of all time. So, that was in 1980. Then July 4th of 1984, Phil Niekro of the New York Yankees, versus the Texas Rangers game, he struck out Larry Parrish for his 3,000th strikeout. All right, and then at number four on my Trop 5 4th of July memorable moments would be July 4th, 1939. A Boston Red Sox, Jim Tabor. He would have one of the most stellar days you can have for a player. The Red Sox were actually playing a doubleheader against the Philadelphia A's that day. In the second game, Tabor would have two grand slams in one game. The second grand slam being an inside the park grand slam. So that's crazy. And then in game one, he actually would go 2 for 3 with one run and two stolen bases. And for that day total with both games combined, he would end up having 11 RBIs, which is still to this day one of the most impressive performances. And that says a lot because it happened in 1939. All right, and then at number three on my top five 4th of July memorable moments, July 4th, 1925. I'm sure you all remember that. It was a great day for two pitchers, Lefty Grove of the Philadelphia A's and Herb Pennock of the New York Yankees. They would both pitch 15 scoreless innings. Yeah, that's right. I said 15 scoreless innings, two pitchers. Now, back in these days, pitchers would actually pitch the shit out of a game. 15 innings these days, God, you're lucky if a pitcher gets 15 pitches in a fucking game these days. So to see that two pitchers not only went 15 innings, but they went scoreless innings. And basically, this game went 15 innings, of course, and then in the bottom of the 15th, the New York Yankees ended up hitting an RBI single. And would go on to win that game. And guess what? That was the first game of a doubleheader that day. So not only did those two guys pitch 15 innings, but that entire team played 15 innings. And then they had to go on and play a second game that day. Then at number two on my top five 4th of July memorable moments, July 4th, 1985. I was born that year. New York Mets versus the Atlanta Braves went 19 innings. This game actually ended up going until 4 in the morning of the following day on July 5th. And there actually ended up being quite a few crazy things that would happen in this game, not only because it went 19 innings, but Keith Hernandez, who played for the Mets, he would hit for a cycle. Then Tom Gorman of the Mets, he was a relief pitcher, and he ended up pitching 6 innings of relief pitching. And he gave up twice 2 game-tying home runs to Atlanta, the second being in the 18th inning. So Atlanta's feeling themselves. They're like, oh, hell yeah, we're finally going to go home. And no, the New York Mets would end up scoring 4 runs in the 19th inning and would go on to win the game 16-13. So not only was it a 19-inning crazy affair, the final score, 16-13, that's a pretty big score for a baseball game. Then at number one on my top five 4th of July memorable moments, July 4th, 1939, is the day Lou Gehrig gave his luckiest man alive speech. I had to put this at number one just because it is an iconic moment in baseball. You still see it every single day on MLB Network. I watch them regularly, so but they have this commercial break that they go to, and they show what part of the speech is actually out there. The entire speech is actually, there isn't a recording of the entire speech, just kind of like the last little bit of it. But basically, Lou Gehrig, if you don't know, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, ended up getting ALS, and he had to retire and at the age of 36 and would unfortunately die 2 years later after this diagnosis. What's crazy about this, because I'd never actually like done any research on it. I knew that Lou Gehrig had died because it's called Lou Gehrig's disease, nowadays. I mean, obviously it's still called ALS, but a lot of people refer to it as Lou Gehrig's disease, because it was kind of like the first time people had really experienced it. But it was kind of crazy to read about it because basically what had happened is the season before, you could kind of see something was wrong with him. And, he was just messing up on like some of the easiest stuff. And you're just like, what is going on with Lou Gehrig? And like I said, at the time, Lou Gehrig was the biggest baseball player on the planet. And not just because of him playing for the Yankees, but he was the most dominating player. I mean, to put it into terms of like today's game, you got to look at it like Tom Brady in football or LeBron James in basketball. Seeing this happen to one of these two guys. would be the equivalent of what happened to him. And so at the end of the 1938 season, they could kind of tell something was wrong with him. And everybody, the fans, the coaches, the media, they're like, we just don't get what's wrong with him. And then the following season, spring training starts, and he can't even like catch the ball. He's like, he's just messing up on just the easiest, most fundamental things in baseball. And it was just crazy to watch. And even I read a reporter's assertion of it, him saying that, like, he's seen baseball players fall off. He's like, that's not what's going on here. I think it's actually something deeper than just like baseball skills. So what ended up happening is the season would start, and Gehrig, he was still just playing atrocious. And there was this, I can't recall the play, but it was just a simple throw to first base. And he couldn't make the play. And he even said, this is the simplest play in the game and I can't make it. And leading up to that game, the managers and the owners were going back and forth. Should we bench Gehrig? And Lou Gehrig ended up benching himself because he was costing his team wins. And he said, I don't know what's going on, but obviously I can't play anymore. So he ended up benching himself. So Lou Gehrig's wife would eventually, they would go to, I'm not sure where the Mayo Clinic is located, but wherever the Mayo Clinic is, the Yankees were playing a game in that state, and Lou Gehrig's wife had called the Mayo Clinic because she was just very concerned about what was going on. And so they started doing tests on him, and come to find out, he had ALS. And so as soon as the league found out, he would end up retiring. But they were like, this is Lou Gehrig, man. We got to give him a Lou Gehrig day. So it would end up being the 4th of July. If you don't know, Lou Gehrig's number is the number 4. And so he would deliver his retirement speech. And he just would say, I feel like the luckiest man alive, blah, 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 that I got to play for the Yankees. And it was reading about it was just crazy because of how, wow, I just can't even imagine. Like I said, it would be like this happening to Tom Brady or LeBron James. Like it just was crazy. And like I said, he would eventually he would die 2 years later, and so it's just crazy that he goes from, I mean, here are his career stats: he had 340 batting average, 2,721 hits, 493 home runs, 1,995 RBI, 6-time World Series champion, 2-time MVP, 7-time All Star, Triple Crown winner in 1934, AL batting champion in 1934, 3-time AL home run hitter, 5-time AL RBI leader. He hit 4 home runs in one game. So this was an all-time star, and he ended up having to retire due to a horrifying disease, by the way. That ALS has got to be one of the worst deaths you will ever have. I mean, I'm basically what it is your brain still functions as a normal person, but your body cannot function. And so imagine you're basically just trapped in your body. And this was also 1939, so the advances on ALS are still but you can last a lot longer. But honestly, I would not. Me personally, if I were ever diagnosed with ALS, shoot me somebody, because that sounds like an awful death. Anyways, you know, so he retired. And then, of course, since they had no idea how much longer he was going to live, the Baseball Hall of Fame actually in 1939 gave him a special induction. He didn't have to retire or wait the years. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, he could not attend due to his ALS. But yeah, that's by far, in my opinion, has to be the most memorable moment had on the 4th of July. And it's just crazy that actually happened, you know, because like I said, that is like happening. If that happened to Tom Brady or LeBron James, we would all be like, what the fuck? I mean, it's just crazy. But anyways, y'all, enjoy your 4th of July. 4th of July is actually a holiday I particularly enjoy, which is weird for me, because if you don't know, I am what is referred to as a nihilist. If you don't know what that means, in layman's terms, I'll dumb it down for you a little bit. It basically just means I think everything is stupid. And that's the truest thing in the world to me. Most everything, if you present something, if you just show me something in my head, the first thought in my head is, this is stupid. Always. Basically what that means is, I think all religions are stupid. I think you all obviously know, if you've been listening to the show, that I think all political opinions and everything about politics is stupid. I think, astrology is stupid. I think, afterlives are stupid. And I think holidays are stupid. And so, usually I don't really care about holidays, but I do like the 4th of July just because I live in Texas and we have really fucking awesome fireworks here. And I mean, awesome for not just like those little like one-offs, like where we literally have fireworks shows. Like you could buy this big box of, fireworks and you just light the fuse and you literally get like yourself like a 10 minute show of fireworks. It's really fucking awesome and really fucking fun. And I enjoy the hell out of it every single year. So I enjoy that. But to all you idiots out there, when you're lighting off fireworks, be safe. Don't like light it off in your fucking hand while you're holding it. What you do is you actually, you know, put it on the ground in a nice safe place where there isn't any like trees or anything around. And you just light the fuse. You don't fucking hold it in your goddamn hand, point it at the sky, light it on fire, and then have the fucking projectile blow off your goddamn hand. That's how your hand gets blown off. So stupid idiots, don't fucking do that shit. But I guess you can, because I hate stupid people. So that just kind of eliminates stupid people. But it might not, cause usually they just blow off their fucking hand. So regardless, that's not how you use a firework. And also I'm sorry to all you Karens out there, because literally the least fun people on the face of this planet are you Karens who complain twice a year, the two times a year when we have fireworks with 4th of July and New Year's, you complain your asses off for like, oh my God, I have to hear fireworks. My dogs. Motherfucker, I got dogs. Guess what? They get over it. So shut up, Karens. I know all you Karens. I see it every single year. Karens on the fucking, on Facebook or in the neighbor's app. And they're always complaining. Why are you blowing out fireworks? Because twice a year for 2 weeks out of the fucking year, you got to hear fireworks. Grow up and get over yourselves, you stupid crybaby losers. Unfun motherfuckers. That's for goddamn sure. If you don't like fireworks, there's something wrong with you. Seriously. Because they're actually really fucking fun, especially the ones I get. I love blowing off fireworks. So all y'all enjoy the 4th of July and enjoy all of the baseball we've got on tap. And I will talk to you fools on Friday.